Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 89. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And once again, Scott, we meet.
We do.
Guests.
At the crossroads of the podcast world.
The crossroads of the future. Joining us today on Forecast, Steve Dorsey, design technologist. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good to meet you. Also joining us, Patrick Delahanty, web developer and video editor and longtime member of the Diamond Club.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you on as well, Patrick. I'm going to have a hard time calling Patrick Patrick instead of P. Delahanty, as his
whatever
name
works.
Usually is. All right, well, let's start off with a hastily picked email from one of our listeners that I forgot to prep before the show. We're going to go with Andre.
So you're getting it now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm picking it out. This is fresh. This hasn't been sitting around in some Google Doc all day. I'm pulling this right out of the email box right now. Andre,
it's as close to the future as you can get, actually.
That's right. Yeah. Andre says, good day, forecasters. In episode 88, Scott mentions how he would like to see what his dog thinks at any given moment. This reminded me of a short story by P.K. Dick called Rogue, and I wondered if he had ever read it. In it, Dick takes us in the mind of a dog and its point of view as people are coming into his yard to pick up the trash, if I remember correctly. Dick twists the entire story like a sci-fi alien invasion. A good read.
It sounds like Philip K. Dick, but I've never read this particular story, Tom. Have you?
I have not read that story. I have read other Philip K. Dick novels that had talking dogs, thinking dogs, you know, portions of the book from the dog's perspective before. I have a feeling that the mystery and the enticement and the attraction of knowing what a dog thinks would evaporate really fast if we ever actually could figure out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very curious about this idea, which he mentioned that I brought this up on other shows, but I've always been fascinated with the idea of being able to get into an animal's brain just for a minute. I don't need it for a long time, but to get into your dog Sawyer's brain for just a second and see what's happening in there so that we can finally kind of make sense of this relationship of dog and man. Are they simply just wanting to eat all the time and therefore, if I fell asleep and slept for too long and they got hungry, they just go ahead and eat me? Like, is that how priority food is for them? Or do they have any real feelings for me as their owner? It's those kinds of questions that I'd like to have answered, and I doubt we'll probably ever get to do that.
Steve, do you think it'd be interesting to find out what goes on in a dog's head?
I do think it would be interesting, but I have this theory on dogs, having grown up with many of them myself, that they have a three-item memory. You can tell them three things, and when you tell them the fourth, the first one falls off the back of the shelf, as it were.
Uh-huh.
So you're only going to get so far.
They have a small L2 cache.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
What about you?
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask Patrick, do you have any ideas of what goes on in a dog's head? Do you want to know?
It would be interesting for about 2 minutes, and then we'd get tired of hearing, ball, let's play ball. Come on, let's play ball.
I'm hungry. Ball.
Yeah. Like, all right, see, turn that off.
I wonder, too, if they would even know, like, I know they want to play catch. My dog does this. She wants to play catch. Every time I grab something that looks like a ball, she wants to play catch. But wouldn't it be fascinating to see what they're really saying? Because they don't have any context for ball or even catch. They probably have a whole different way of processing what it means when the owner gets up, grabs the ball, and looks at them. They know what they get out of it is awesome, and it's stimulating that part of their brain. But I would love to know how they interpret that. What do they call it, for lack of a better way of explaining it? Like, that kind of stuff would fascinate the heck out of me. I mean, Tom, you love your dogs. Wouldn't it be great to just see if the love is returned or if they're just drones that want your food and your time?
It's funny. Like, I have two dogs, Django and Sawyer. They're both pretty smart as dogs go, but I can tell Django's just a little smarter. She catches on to things, recognizes words we don't think that they're going to recognize, seems to anticipate things. I'd be curious to compare the two and find out if that's just my own made-up interpretation of their reactions, or if, you know, if Sawyer is just sitting there going like, yeah, food, ball, play, and Django's like, you know, I wonder if there's something else to life. Is there things beyond the dog bowl? Am I limiting myself?
Because we anthropomorphize these animals so much that I feel like we'll be surprised. I feel like we'll get in there and go, oh, they're thinking about, I mean, that's how we would translate what they're thinking. It would be a bit of a shock to most of us.
Yeah.
And so who knows? Maybe the future is closer than we think and we can try this one day.
I think we will get to a point someday where we can actually get an approximation of what's going on in the brains of animals. I don't know if we'll ever be able to like have the collar that speaks for them or anything like that, but... I do think we'll get a better understanding of this someday. All right, let's start with our short-term predictions. And Patrick, let's begin with you. Something you think will happen sooner rather than later. What do you got for us?
All right. You've seen those T-shirts on places like ThinkGeek that light up, and they've got the little Wi-Fi or the sound pattern. Well, I think within 5 years, it's going to move away from being this plastic sheet that Velcros onto the shirt and actually be part of the fabric of the shirt.
So a wearable computer.
And, well, it'll start as just a basic graphic, and you've kind of like the LCD and the calculator screen. And then it'll evolve so that you've eventually got multiple colors or more complicated design. And it will get into an area where you can actually have a high-resolution display on fabric. And we'll probably see this first in like advertising, in novelty shirts, maybe even flags. But then I think at some point it'll get to, so you're wearing a wristband that's got your phone on it with the display, and it's all soft and cushy and all is fabric display.
So you could own maybe, now let's say you could own three shirts. Let's say you did laundry every 3 days. Okay. You'd own three of these shirts and they all had this high resolution display. And every day you're essentially wearing the exact same shirt, but that day you've decided it's going to look like, you know, I don't know, Charlie Brown stripes in the middle of it. Or the next day it's going to look like a different texture or something like that. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, but I imagine it would still light up, so you'd be wearing these bright shirts. So you're going to have your Charlie Brown stripe, and it's going to be, the yellow part is just going to be really bright. So I don't know if you'd AMOLED necessarily shirts. Want that, but yeah. And so maybe you'd have a hat where it's got Boston Red Sox or whatever team, and it's all lit up bright. That would be cool.
Yeah, it'd be great for front runners.
Before I throw it to Steve, what kind of interactivity would these shirts have, or do you foresee that that would even be a thing? Would we need to interact with them? Would people be able to see your advertisement come up, click your chest, and get the product coming that they want, that sort of thing?
Patrick?
Oh, I thought you were. I'm sorry. I thought you were asking Steve. But yeah, I think it would be interactive. So you could, like I said, you could have the phone, and somebody could do some sort of trade show shirt where you come up and just touch somebody's chest. Probably a guy, but
not at trade shows.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It would have to be a guy wearing the shirt, but otherwise there's lawsuits. But
no, I'm saying at trade shows they'll actually have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, car interiors, you want that big fancy car, you get the light-up seats, and you have video playing on the seats. I wouldn't want that. But.
I'm liking this idea as a way to wear just one shirt. You throw in some nanobots that do some self-cleaning. I can change what the shirt looks like every day. Nobody knows I'm wearing the same shirt. Solves the whole laundry problem for me. We just need to add the nanobots, and that probably takes it out of the five-year range. But, Steve, do you think some kind of programmable shirt is possible in the next few years?
I think we're halfway there. I think that the technology exists to make that happen. I'm reminded of the film Minority Report with Tom Cruise. I think of a shot where he's in his apartment / penthouse, and he is trying to eat breakfast, and he's got this box of cereal that won't leave him alone because it's making noise trying to sell him more cereal, and he ends up throwing it across the room. Of course, that's, you know, a peer into the future. But I see it happening with garments. It definitely will happen. It's just a matter of when. We've got OLED that's halfway there. It's not ruggedized, and it's not quite sturdy enough. But we've also got the tie-ins with wireless technology and marketing that are going to bring it to us, probably in the next 10 years.
Seems like functional feedback would be nice, too. It'd be nice to be told when it's too dirty or when you've got a big mustard stain on the back of it and you didn't know.
Something that can neutralize your armpits.
Yeah.
You no more picking up the shirt and smelling it before you put it on. It'll just tell you. You look at it's red light.
Hook it up to your alarm clock and you've got the bed sheets, and as the morning comes, it gets brighter and wakes you up that way. That'd be cool.
I see camouflage also.
Oh, yeah. Very adaptable. Yeah. That's true. That's a good point. Mm. Nobody will ever be able to see you.
That'd be cool. I want one now.
Yeah, I kind of do.
I got one of those ThinkGeek shirts. It actually had the Wi-Fi, and it's the cheesiest thing. It looks so much better on the site.
Oh, yeah. No, we had one of those came into CNET when Veronica and I were both working there that did that took, like, ambient noise and gave you the levels. It was a VU meter, which sounds great until you put it on and it's heavy and looks dorky, and then it's constantly flashing. And,
it's the next
battery pack hangover.
Yeah. All right, Steve, let's throw it over to you for your short-term prediction, something that you think maybe happened in the next few years. What do you got?
Well, the first thing that I thought of was moving towards a world without liquid currency. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a good thing, but it's a political thing. It's a technological thing. And I see it as being a distinct possibility.
So everything's just kind of in the cloud?
Yeah. Everything would be handled through whatever the internet may be at that time. It probably won't resemble much what it does today. But I see a system where credit is king, and people don't necessarily go to the farmer's market and pay with cash. They go to the farmer's market and they pay with their card or their fingerprint or their retinal scan or whatever the case may be.
So there's a bit of a push toward this from Bitcoin, which all of you may be familiar with. What's interesting about Bitcoin and the little bit of reading I've done and tried to sort of learn how this may be applicable to what I do, it is a currency that doesn't have a government backing it, a bank backing it. Like it's missing that traditional sort of brick and mortar gold standard sort of stuff going on under behind the scenes that we have with banks and credit unions and so on. Now, do you feel like they're on the right path? Is their model the kind of thing you're talking about? And do we soon see larger financial institutions giving home loans and things like that to people via a method that's more akin to what you're talking about?
I do see that happening. I do see the larger monetary transactions taking place privately as time goes on. But it's already happening if you think about it, because we're going to move into an area of non-government mandated credit lines. banks besides the federal bank that can back these things up. I mean, we see it already on small scale in online gaming. It happens everywhere. And I think it's going to permeate. People are going to trust things more and more, and it'll seep into our lives on a daily basis.
I think this is really interesting because not just Bitcoin, but what you just said about in-game currency and things like Facebook credits and Xbox Live points, and all of these things are valuable and tradable for liquid currency right now. You can take Warcraft gold and sell it. They don't want you to do it, but you can do it. You can take Facebook credits and sell them, and that's actually okay. They're fine with that. They at least until abuses start happening, I guess. But all of this stuff is translatable, and eventually we're going to have all kinds of alternative currencies in the system that will have an unforeseen effect on how liquid currency plays out. The interesting thing about Bitcoin, it's an attempt to be a virtual liquid currency, to say you can't replicate an individual Bitcoin. We're going to use encryption. We're going to use checksums. We're going to make it so that this coin exists, even though it's virtual, as an individual unit that can't be counterfeited. Whereas what we've got going now with banks and credit cards and such is less secure than that. If you just send $1,000 through PayPal, it's not like they say, well, you got to wait for us to pull that $1,000 out of your bank account, put it on a truck, and deliver it to somebody else's bank. They're like, yeah, okay, it just happened, instant, and the physical part of it is made up in the background. So we're close to that in so many little different ways. I think you're right. I think we'll get there. I don't know how we'll get there. Patrick, do you have any thoughts on that, on the matter? How we end up in that situation?
Yeah, I've been trying to think of how something that like that could come about, and the only thing I can think of is if our current banks fail and we need something else to turn to, and you know, banks could never fail, but
they're too big.
Yeah. So I think if there's a complete collapse, then we might be looking for some alternative, just for the barter system, something to, above that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Right now we see money and we see, I don't know, a credit card transaction or even a PayPal transaction. Tom's right. It's kind of like almost there, but there's this last mile that we haven't quite gotten over yet, where we're like, oh, wait, that needs to be actual money. I need to be able to show that there was a transfer from bank to bank and have some sort of solid sense that that's happening. But I feel like there's a big generation coming up that you don't necessarily have to be an economics major to understand this, but there's a generation coming up who see that maybe there are more, I don't know, there's more value in something as simple as an idea versus a chunk of gold in a bank somewhere. There's lots of stuff in between that you could call valuable. You mentioned video games, and now you don't, you know, in World of Warcraft, you can buy gold to play in the game. You're not supposed to, but soon enough, very quickly here, my prediction is that Blizzard will allow you to buy gold directly from them.
Well, they got the auction house in Diablo that allows you to buy with real money from the auction house. So it's a half step that way. Mm-hmm.
Correct. And they're doing gold that way in that game. You can buy gold in Diablo. So I feel like it's a step in that direction. And leaders like them will help to determine some of this stuff. But it'll be interesting to see if the generation playing a lot of video games now, coming up through high school and early college, they're going to have a very different idea of what money is, mm-hmm. or what forms of currency are. And having all this experience with Microsoft Space Points and you know, the Wii does it with their stupid Nintendo Point things, and all this kind of stuff will be a part of their sort of financial culture. They'll probably design a brave new crazy place that will have, I mean, this is more midterm, I suppose, but you know, where that is more accepted and we need less to back up money, or maybe we'll need more, but it's a different kind of more. I don't know. This is a fascinating prediction, though. I love it.
If I put $7 in my daughter's hand, she knows what it is, but she also knows what those little plastic rectangles in daddy's wallet are for.
Uh-huh. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. Well, what do you think of this on an even weirder side of this prediction is the idea that things like buttons or plus ones start to become so valuable that they become currency. So it's almost like a barter situation. Like, hey, you know, Scott does a little illustration for me, and in exchange, I go plus one all of his properties to help, you know, drive up a social ranking.
You're seeing that happen already. You see it happen. You know, it's not necessarily endorsed by these companies, but you see it happen at Dig, at Reddit, at Facebook. Even Google Plus is jumping in that direction. And it's not something that they necessarily want, but it's something that's going to happen because people will twist whatever system is out there to their own benefit.
That's interesting because it's hard to quantify then what Tom did. So if our exchange was, all right, Tom, I'll do this for you, and your job is to go do all these clicks, we have some kind of contract in place that says that he did it. It's then possible that all of those, all of that is helping me grow the other parts of business that maybe do translate to currency I can go down to the store and use and eat with, right? But it's hard to quantify that transaction the way it is now. Normally it's like, here you go, Tom, that'll be $100 and you give me $100. Well, now it's like, here's that, Tom, give me 50 clicks. Now, what do those equal in terms of real currency? How does that value go up and down every day? Who's watching that? How do we quantify it? That's going to be the hard part. We figure out easy ways to do that, and I think we're almost there. That last mile is not as long as we think.
No, it's not.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Netflix, with whom you cannot pay in woofy or virtual currency, but you can pay in real money, at least, you know, through a credit card or something like that, and get unlimited TV shows and movies for $7.99 a month, streaming to your phone, to your tablet. They work on iPhone, they work on Android, they work on Xbox, they work on PS3, Nintendo, Wii. Lots of televisions have Netflix apps built right in. I have it on Google TV in the back room and Roku box in the front room, and I'm able to stream all of the TV shows and movies that Netflix provides on any of these devices in an unlimited amount. There's not some like, well, you know, you got to pay per episode, or you got to pick, you know, you only get 3 hours of streaming. It's unlimited. It's there. You can choose from a wide variety of movies and TV shows, and you can do it for free for 30 days because you're watching this show. When you go to netflix.com/twit, be sure to use that URL when you sign up, or if you're recommending it to somebody else, you want to do them a favor. Give them maybe a barter transaction where you say, hey, I'll give you 30 days free of Netflix by telling you the URL you don't know. Knowledge is power. netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Forecast. All right, on to the long-term predictions. These are more the longer views, Steve, and we'll start with you. What do you see when you look a little farther down the road than our short-term?
100 years from now. Between 10 and 100 years from now, I see the decentralization of energy development and consumption. And what I mean by that is power stations will become obsolete. We're going to reach a point where in which you're going to need so many power stations in an urban area, so many power generation systems, that it's going to be unhealthy / unbearable to maintain them. And so you will see power generation in the home. It's already happening on a small scale. People like Bill Nye are, you know, putting solar panels on their roof, and it's doing great things.
Or things like a home version of the Bloom Box kind of thing. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. It's going to mature, and we will see it take hold. Not in the next 10 years. There are too many interests in corporate energy these days already. Black Helicopter speaks behind me. But I see it becoming decentralized, and I do think there will be power players in that industry. There already are, in fact. But I see people generating their own power and creating a sort of grid where if you see power go out in one area, it doesn't go out in another area. It's much easier to get back in line.
It seems like you'd be able to, if we could boil it down to a simple process like mowing my lawn, in other words, well, the problem is a lot of people let their lawn go because they're lazy or whatever. But let's say that
I'm going to get around to it, Scott. Stop nagging.
I just was trying to around the way remind you that you haven't mowed your lawn in a while. That takes a certain amount of effort, takes a certain amount of responsibility. Now, I'm doing that primarily for the beautification of the neighborhood or my own self, whatever. You know, I just like how it looks or whatever my reasons are. If it becomes something that economical and that easy, then I think that's key. It seems like right now what people are asked to do is install this great big array of stuff, and they're really not sure if that's going to work. And when they start seeing the cost benefit, it's way down the road because the initial investment was so high, and the government helped with this little thing that they did this year, but that's not enough. And all of those sorts of things hinder people from making changes like that. It seems like when people make major technological changes, either in the home or whatever, it's when it becomes ubiquitous and easy, like electricity, like plumbing, indoor plumbing. It seems like we have to get our ability to generate that kind of energy as simple as flipping something on every day, pushing leaves out of the way of whatever the sun receptors, whatever we're going to call them in 100 years. Do you feel like how wrong or how right am I about how that implementation is going to take ease of use for Americans anyway to adopt this technology?
It's tricky. There's a better and a worse side to it, just like anything, of course. But it's going to be good with the idea that it's going to be a flexible system that is going to allow for error in a far more convenient way than current systems do. You won't have entire cities that go black. You'll have blocks. You'll have it'll be more of a neural net rather than a something that's controlled from a centralized location. But also, you'll run into these areas where you have mandated energy generation for private property. Are you going to lose your title to your house if you don't generate enough energy, or if you don't generate it in the right way, or if you don't sell it back to the right energy company? So there's a lot to consider in both directions.
I am often enticed by this idea of a mesh network taking over in lots of areas, not just in energy. I think you're right. I have this gut feeling that eventually we're going to decentralize, but in the internet, where mesh networks are a possibility someday, where we don't have centralized internet control or the power grid or food distribution. There's lots of examples where that has worked, but then part of me wonders, well, why don't we have more examples of that working? And will we be able to have all of the luxuries that we are used to in a decentralized network. That's one of the criticisms of buying locally with farms. It's like, yeah, that's great, and you should do it. But at a certain point, if you want to get cheap food in certain categories, it has to be shipped from somewhere else because it grows better there or whatever.
And people in Chicago can't buy tomatoes.
Yeah, exactly. They have to be shipped from somewhere else. So, you know, Patrick, do you see that sort of decentralized future taking over in various areas, especially power? Like
Actually, on my way home from work today, I passed a few streets where the power lines are just all over the street because we had Hurricane Irene here yesterday. And I'm sure everybody in that street would love to have their own power generation. But I have to wonder if it's really that efficient because, like, for example, my parents have a generator. So when they lose power, they can just turn on the generator. But they're not in a really good area for solar power. And it would still need a lot of solar panels. And I don't think they want to cover their roof in solar panels. And they can't really do wind energy where they are. So I'm wondering what can they do at home to regenerate power without having to rely on somebody else.
Well, it's a goofy, see, we're at this stage where we're not really ready for this, but I agree with what Steve says. It needs to be more like a neural net. It needs to be able to be so efficient that if houses, you know, A, B, and C, suddenly they are vacated, nobody's there, that doesn't adversely affect the larger grid, which maybe, let's say, is a small town or maybe just a grid of a few neighborhoods. It needs to be, you know, efficient enough that there's reserves somehow generated all the time, that even a complete blackout means, or I guess they would be the blackout. So it changes the paradigm so much that I don't think we're even thinking of all the possibilities, but I think Steve has it right. It isn't just going to be, well, Bill over there put a satellite or put a solar panel on the house, so we're all good. It's going to have to be something bigger, something more, and something a little bit communal in a way. I mean, not that they all have to sort of agree, but it has to be everybody working on it together, I think.
Or maybe the towns got parks around town, and those neighborhoods share solar farms or wind farms or something like that.
What do you think, Steve? Is that how it comes about?
I see that as being the major ingredient. The idea was brought up about energy storage, and that's something that we're probably 100 years away from. Battery technology really isn't that advanced, and it's definitely nowhere near the point that we're going to need it to be at if we're going to store up enough energy during the day to use at night. Especially if we're operating in a world economy where we're going to be trading stocks on the Chinese stock market at 2 a.m. So these are all things to consider. And I for one welcome our new internet overlords. Yeah. But there's a lot to think about. None of these problems are easy.
All right, let's move over to you, Patrick. Your long-term prediction, more of the flying car, 100 years sort of stuff. What do you got for us?
Well, I think it's been about 5,000 years that this has been around, and it hasn't really changed, and it's your toilet. It's about time.
I don't know. I've seen some pretty primitive toilets.
Yeah. Well,
that are very different than the one I have in my house.
But ultimately, they're all the same sort of thing, and I think in the future, there'll be some way for waste extraction that will be more sanitary, let's just say. And that it will be completely different than what we've been doing in the past. And when you think about it, the whole process of that hasn't really changed since the toilet was invented in 2800 BC.
So what you're saying, if I've got you right, is ways of taking the waste after it leaves you have changed. But it's essentially like relying on gravity and whisking it away from you somehow. And we're going to get better than that.
Yeah. And, you know, having to do, you know, the sanitary stuff yourself. Maybe there's some other way. I could see in the Star Trek world, they just transport it out of you.
Scott, didn't you have that idea at one point?
Yeah, we talked about this on a previous show where the only ultimate solution for any of this is for it to be teleported out of my body. I don't know if 100 years is enough for this to happen. Maybe this is more crazy ass, but to teleport it from me to space somewhere where nobody cares, that's a solution I can get my head around. Until then, until we can do something, or even I'll meet them halfway and do half the thing. We'll just have a toilet, but then that receptacle is immediately, that's the teleporter, right? Out, gone, wherever it needs to go. So my urine is on Uranus for all we care. I see what I did there at the words of the name. But you know what I mean? Like that to me, that's the everything else is still just going to be another version of a toilet until then. Don't you think, Patrick? How does that fly for you? What do you think of that?
Don't use the word fly.
Well, I don't think it'll go right to teleporting, but the Japanese are at the forefront of toilet technology. I was there in 2006, and my hotel room had this toilet with all these buttons on it. I couldn't read a thing on it because it's all in Japanese. So I just had to start pressing them to see what they did. I ended up squirting the wall out in the hallway, and then I squirted the mirror behind the toilet. But I think there's I think that the toilet paper lobby has it in, and that's what they're holding us back here.
Oh, I see. That's a powerful lobby. Those guys show up. You know, they show up in their suits and their ties, and they always have such nice, well-shaven-looking guys, but there's always a piece of toilet paper hanging off the back of their shoe. You notice that? They're always just dragging that through Congress.
It's called marketing.
Oh, don't squeeze the Charmin or else.
I think the key may, again, be nanobots. I know it's the second time I've brought it up. But some nanobots that just kind of take care of everything for you on the back end, so to speak. That solves the entire problem. This is, you know, it really is a backhaul issue. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to interrupt myself. Please save me, Steve. Do you have a perspective?
I think you're on a roll. I'm enjoying this person.
Me too.
It, roll.
Get it? Hey. But
the Japanese will bring it to us. That's the main thing. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the three shells will be invented in Japan.
Yes, the three shells, exactly.
Yes, who can forget the three shells? If you don't know it, look it up online.
Demolition Man is our model for the future.
Yes, a classic. No. But
it comes from Taco Bell being the main restaurant in the world. Yeah, anyway.
Also true. Yeah. The handling of human waste is going to need to be handled in a way that, you're going to hate this word, but makes it renewable. Mm. Already doing it up on the space station, and
it sounds disgusting.
Direction.
It isn't. I mean, everything.
No, it really isn't.
Everything we use has been renewed.
That's right. And so, they don't necessarily have to make it into something that's ingested. It could be used as compost. It could be used as some sort of animal feed or something along those lines. It could be used in any number of ways. It could be burned for fuel, for heat, for energy. But it does need to be disposed of somehow. And I've actually had the thought in the past that it could be beamed out of you, something to eliminate the mess. And one has to wonder what will happen to human physiology when that takes over, as opposed to the current toilet paper methods that we're engaging in today. But it should be an interesting science to keep an eye on.
Well, I mean, you know, we laugh. we laugh and stuff, but I mean, ultimately, this is a real human problem. And as the population grows, we have to think of these things as many 12-year-olds out there may giggle and laugh at it, we got to figure out a better way to deal with it. And so, I'm all for that. When I was in China,
Bill Gates
they wanted me to use holes everywhere in China, and I hated that. So anything's an improvement on that. I feel like what we've got now kind of works, but it's also the out of sight, out of mind, kind of like the dump. We're probably just ruining our planet, and when we don't care, we flush, it's done, we're out, we don't have to deal with it anymore. Perhaps we need to have to deal with it more to advance in that area. I don't know.
Patrick, were you inspired by Bill Gates? Because he recently did talk about reinventing the toilet.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that. If he reinvents it, though, does that mean we call it the bill? Maybe that's why people have been trying to avoid doing this. They don't want it named after them.
Well, look what happened to Crapper. Yeah.
Dean Kamen hasn't jumped on that one yet.
Yeah.
Hey, do you have a plunger for the merit?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm staying far away from that. It could be the gate. Yeah.
Or you could call it the Microsoft Bob. I don't know. You do a lot of things, Bob.
All right. Let's move. If we haven't drifted over into this area already, let's move to our crazy ass predictions. One really far out forecast, and Patrick will stay with you. What do you got for us?
Well, I considered making this my short term, but it would have kind of killed everything else. But because I think the Earth is going to be eaten from within by a black hole. And the way I see this coming about is, you've got the big frat guy at the college. He gets through, coasts through all his classes, cheats some, borrows some answers, and then he gets an internship some summer at a place where they're researching black holes because, you know, his dad knows the dad there, and so he gets it hooked up through nepotism. So he gets in there, and while he messes up some calculations as part of his internship, and then they experiment on the black hole, it fails. The black hole falls to the center of the Earth and slowly starts to eat up the center of the Earth. And it doesn't just suck the Earth in because it's not going to... It only has the mass that went into it. So it has the mass as it goes down through the center of the Earth and it grows. And then as stuff in the middle falls into it, it gets bigger and bigger. Eventually, it pulls down the bottom of the ocean. Oceans start draining. And then, like, Mount Everest will collapse. And then the crust just crumbles in. And we're dead.
Wow. Wow.
The singularity is near, but it's not the singularity you thought.
Doomsday indeed.
This is maybe the most depressing prediction we've had outside of, you know, we get the zombie stuff and we get all those kind of apocalyptic visions, but this is a future where there aren't even survivors. Like in all of those others, if it's a nuke, if it's zombies, if it's whatever it is, aliens, there's always a little pocket of somebody who lives in a cave, survives, it resists the super virus, whatever. In your scenario, there's no getting off. I guess if we've got people in space at the moment.
Yeah, they'd be orbiting a black hole, and they'd stay orbiting. But anybody on the surface, oh, well, it's too bad we were calling everybody from the space station.
Well, how quick is this? How fast does this happen once it starts to kick in? Once it's in the Earth and starts to do its thing, are we looking at a week, months, years, what?
I'd imagine it would start slowly. Because it's going to take a while for everything to just come in. It's not going to suck everything in. It's just going to be this big void in the middle of the planet. And as this happens, you'll experience earthquakes, odd weather. So maybe in Virginia there'll be an earthquake or something, and then some hurricanes. Not that this is going to happen, but...
Oh, no, it will.
Well,
over weeks or a month,
is
maybe.
There anything we can do to prevent this?
I think once that black hole falls through the floor of the lab, we're screwed.
So we'd have to stop the experiments?
Yes. You got to make sure that this college guy doesn't get his internship through nepotism.
Right. Because you're not saying it's anything we know of happening, like the Large Hadron Collider or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, those guys, they know their stuff. But all it takes is one guy to mess it up, and then we're doomed.
It takes a lot of energy to create a black hole in the first place. Is he getting it from the home energy source that Steve
was
talking about?
Yes, the decentralized grid.
Yeah, it's all these people with the solar panels and the wind farms in their backyards and the foreign energy.
So, Patrick Delahanty, are you saying that if we go green, we will doom us all to die in a black hole?
If we go green, we'll eventually go black. Once you go black.
You can't go... anywhere else.
You can't leave a black hole. No, that's all he's saying. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can't escape the gravity of it. It's a very grave situation. Wow. How ridiculous is this idea, Steve?
I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility.
I'm pretty sure it might be.
In a novel.
In a novel.
Okay. I mean, I like it. I mean, this has got serious Bruce Willis potential written all over it. If that happens, they will definitely be erecting a statue with this jock's name on it, and they'll make it out of uranium so no one will go anywhere near it.
Wow.
I see it happening, but it could take a couple of weeks for that thing to hit center, and then it would eventually hit the Earth's iron core.
Now, wait a minute. How does it sink to the center if it's a black hole?
Well, if it's a black hole, then anything near it is falling into it, which means that there's really only one direction that it can move, and that's towards the center of the Earth.
It would just pull the center of the Earth towards it, but it would also pull everything else.
Both would be happening at the same time. The Earth and the Moon are revolving around each other.
There'd be a big dimple in the Earth, right?
Yeah. That's how it would start. Right. It would be a horrible acne problem.
Yeah, at first it'd be kind of cute in a way, and then we would realize, that's a really bad thing. And then we'll have to go to plan B, which is send Aaron Eckhart and all his people down in a little ship. I've seen that movie.
That's right.
Even if there's the slightest chance of this happening, it's another good reason why we need to get off this planet and explore the Moon and Mars, right?
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
Absolutely.
All right. Crazy-ass prediction. I like it.
Yep.
Well played, sir.
It could happen.
Everything we need from Crazy Ass you provided today.
Sure.
Thank you very
not
much for
scientifically
that.
Scientifically possible. But okay. you can ask Dr. Kiki. Crazy ass prediction, Steve. Time frame doesn't matter. Just take the leap. What do you have for us?
All right. What I see happening is we're already in an era where we can detect and manipulate signals, whether those signals be magnetic, whether they be radio, signals of light and the spectrum. They can all be collected and scrutinized. I think the next step in that direction is going to be the human mind. We're going to hit a point in the future where we will be able to not only read somebody's mind, but create what they thought of. This could eventually possibly lead to a Matrix-like future where we don't need the physical world anymore because we can create it all in our minds. But it could also just be really fun for a while where if you want something, just think about it and it'll pop up.
Yeah, screw the replicator.
Yeah.
Just think T. Earl Grey hot.
Think a tater.
Done.
So when you say you think about it and it happens, is it a virtual reality or is it actually like you can just think a
piece of
chocolate cake? No, I'm
talking right there on your desk next to your microphone. That's where it'll appear, you know.
All right, well, the trick for this then is to figure out how to hone it so that it's not just any old thought. Because I've got a friend that if you let him have this technology, the freeway would be filled with naked women suddenly. Like there's no way to control that. So how do you hone it so you say, well, I'm thinking about surfing, obviously I don't want a bunch of water to suddenly be here and have a surfboard down ready, but I'm also hungry for a burger that I would like to show up. What kind of self-control are humans going to have then?
There would be a degree of self-control that would be required. We would have to learn how to use this technology so that we didn't create skyscrapers in our living room.
Right. Oh, man.
Right.
I don't trust other people with this tech is all I'm getting at.
But I could think my arteries clear of cholesterol.
Right.
Yeah. Why not?
Therefore, I can eat whatever I think I want.
I want to think my mind into a machine so that I'll live forever.
And that would solve the toilet problem.
Bingo. We've come full circle.
Just think it away.
Wow.
Patrick?
Oh, I thought about a black hole. Oh, no.
Oh, see, that's how that happens. It's actually not even like some smart lab guy. It's just somebody whose mind is wandering.
Right.
Mm.
Well, I think you mentioned it would need training, and I'm worried about when you decide somebody's ready because, you know, that one mistake and boom, I just thought about the vat of acid. So, oops.
Right. Oh, I've got the answer. Right. Duh. It's just we already know this. We work with computers now. We've been doing this for a couple of decades almost now. We're all used to hitting confirmation buttons. So if we thought, well, you'd be spammed all day with confirmation buttons. But if you just think of something like, oh, I'm thinking of a big giant fireball, bloop, are you sure you want to conjure up a fireball?
Great.
No.
It's user access control. Yeah, that doesn't ever cause a problem where people are like, yeah, okay.
Multiple
oops, black
views.
Hole. Did I just say okay to a black hole?
Oh, shoot. Damn. Shortcut keys.
Now, wait, is this a technology or a skill?
I think it would incorporate both. I think that it would start out as tech, and it would require some skill to use, just like anything that we're using today. I mean,
so we could theoretically build in safeguards.
Yeah,
that the technology wouldn't allow.
Hopefully.
More than living things could not be created, for instance, or black holes, or okay. So we just need some good safeguards and keep it from getting hacked.
Good luck with that.
The whole idea. It scares you if you start thinking about it.
And then when you think about it, it becomes real.
And it could be anything. Like conjure a spider that's bigger than a tank. That's a bad idea.
Don't do that.
Spider. Yeah, don't do that.
I want a tank bigger than that tank spider.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's just mutually assured tank spider destruction.
I, for one, welcome our tank spider overlords.
Myself.
You may have just titled the show right there.
All right. I believe it's time for four questions now. Is it not, Scott?
It is. That's the time of the show where we ask four questions rapid fire style from our guests. They're not allowed to think about it too hard. They have to answer from the gut. And I am asking, oh my gosh, who am I asking? I should find out. I am asking Steve. Steve, are you sitting comfortably, sir?
I am now.
All right. Here are your four questions. Good luck. Sort of. Where are they? There we are. Will we finally get a future where everyone has a shaved head, ladies included?
Yes. It will be in vogue.
Sweet.
It's the Sinead future.
Mm-hmm. Tom still has his beard, though. Oh, crap. They found that. That's beautiful. Photoshop, by the way. Goodness, Tony must be at the board today.
You kind of look like John Strickland in that picture.
Yeah, a little bit. What mascot would you want to be president? Mr. Peanut, Mr. Clean, the Green Giant, or something different?
I would say Mr. Peanut. That guy's got style. He can,
sure
he can forge a contract with any country and any corporation he needs to.
He dances way out of any problem.
That's the problem. People always vote on appearances, you know?
Always.
And then a tough guy like Mr. Clean doesn't get a chance.
We just don't trust him.
But and also, he's living in a future where everyone has a shaved head, so nobody can tell it's him.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. And the Green Giant has no chance anyway because he's running on the Green Party. Those guys never win.
He's not real.
Yeah.
No. Oh,
unlike the other two.
If you could construct a functioning gun out of chicken bones, can you imagine a future where that would make sense?
Nice question.
No.
I suggest everyone will see the movie Existenz on Netflix.
And I hate cats.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, chicken gun's no good. The lack of answer is the best answer possible, honestly. final question. Food replicators or dude replicators?
The former, I think.
Former is food replicator.
That's just me talking. I'm not judging.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I agree with you. I'm kind of with you on that. No more dudes. We got enough dudes. Yeah. And that's your four questions. Congratulations, Tom. I hand it over to you.
All right. Well done. Thank you. Patrick Delahanty, are you sitting comfortably, sir?
Reasonably enough.
Good. Then we'll begin. Question number one. What manner of robot will eventually rule us all? Humanoid or flying or Roomba?
Oh, it's got to be the Roomba.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're developed by military experts, and, you know, some code might sneak in.
Yeah, and you don't pay attention. You're like, oh, it's just a Roomba. Yep. Next thing you know, running the show. Question number two.
DARPA thing.
What's that?
It was a DARPA thing, wasn't it? DARPA?
DARPA Roomba made the DARPA thing?
I thought so. Maybe not.
They brought us the internet. I know that. question number two. What will we run out of first? Oil, water, or space?
Oil.
Why will we run out of oil first?
We're using it all, and we're not making enough new oil by killing dinosaurs.
Right. We can always find more space, theoretically.
Yep.
It's
water,
worth more.
Water recycles. Sure. Question number three. Will we ever achieve time travel?
I hope so. I love time travel.
Or have we?
How long have you been time traveling?
Oh, I disavow any knowledge about time travel. I'm sorry.
Thank you, John Titor. And question number four. Will anyone ever get their ass to Mars?
No, because the radiation would kill us on the way, and any spaceship protected enough to keep us safe would be way too heavy.
A sad but reasonable answer.
Yep. So we'll die in the black hole.
Not crazy ass at all.
I can't believe you're like, you know, actually, no, we can't go to Mars because it's radiation. But black hole could kill us all. let's be serious here for a moment. All right. Good job. Thank you, Patrick Delahanty. Thank you, Steve Dorsey. A great job on forecast today, guys. Very enjoyable.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's an honor to be here.
Absolutely. Patrick Delahanty, you can find in our chat room regularly at live.twit.tv. P. Delahanty is your name on the chat room, but then it's Delahanty P. on Twitter, right?
No, it's P. Delahanty on Twitter.
Why is it backwards? Right. Oh, that I'm looking at something else.
It's backwards on, yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. Okay, but anything else you want to talk about where people can find what you do online?
I run animecons.com, and it's got a list of all the anime conventions around the world.
And Steve Dorsey, you're on the Google Plus because that's just the way you roll. And because it's real names, you find him under Steve Dorsey. Anything else that you're doing you want to talk about? Let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, I do a lot of work with web standards, web development, web design, video editing and animation. But my passion is cartography, and I participate a lot in the Waze social network, which is an application that's available for Android, iPhone, and other platforms. And it's essentially a free GPS. Check it out. You might like it.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Scott Johnson, thank you for co-hosting, as usual.
Always. This is one of my favorite things to do during the week, Tom. I cannot wait to hear what future we reveal next week.
And then I always have to make him plug something.
Oh, I'll plug something. My hair, because he keeps putting that bald picture up. I'm going to tell you that, I know what I'll say. I'm going to be at BlizzCon in October. It's not very far away. It's only about 42 days. Are you going, Tom?
I'm going. I'm planning on going.
Oh, I had no idea. Sweet.
Just
that
decided.
Will be fantastic.
No, I decided over the weekend, actually.
All right. Well, you can see both Tom and I then. And the entire Instance crew will be there doing some kind of live something something. We'll be at the Guild Hall for a while, spending a bunch of time on the convention floor. My anniversary's today, so hello to my wife who will never see this.
Hey, happy anniversary.
Thanks very much. It's nice of you to say.
Thanks for spending part of your anniversary with us.
People can follow me on Twitter, /extra life. I never put that plug on here, so I'll do it here. So it's Extra Life on Twitter, and I hope to see you there, everyone.
Don't forget to leave comments at our website, folks, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email, forecastpodcast@gmail.com. That's it, everybody. Thanks for watching Forecast. We'll see you in the future.
Bye. Music.
But it's only 32 years away.
Yay.
Good job. Nice show.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That was great show. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You guys were great. Enjoyed it.
You guys were awesome. Great
discussion. Had to clear my throat for the last 10 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You don't have a cough button, huh?
No.
That sucks.
That's all right. Hey, sorry, yeah, I'm loving the bald pic. That's gorgeous.
My daughter, I have this other photo I did for a Pomo thing. I have to speak at a, it's a long story,
looks
but anyway,
like Lex Luthor.
They needed a promo shot. So the real picture has hair on it, but my daughter said, what would you look like bald? So I just quickly Photoshopped it, put it online, and then now I understand my mistake.
Not at all. Not at all. Beautiful.
Awesome.
Although Jason Howell will be gone because he is out today.
Stranded.
In mysterious circumstances. Actually, car problems. So
I'm trying
to make it sound more fun than it was.
Tom,
he's not having
Tom
fun.
Should run. You should run the board.
I don't think that's a good idea.
I think that should be a twit first. Let's see it happen tonight.
One of these days. See, I was never allowed to sit on the ball, so I couldn't run the board. But now there's no ball over there.
The ball is the future toilet. I don't know if anyone told you.
Okay. No.
All right. Talk to you guys.